Greetings and welcome to the Reasoning with an Optimist podcast for the week of January 31st, 2016. This is Jack Brissett-Mills. Got a conversation today with Kelly, but it's not the Kelly I had a conversation with before. It's a different Kelly. But first, the verses I wrote for Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul verses for his week 44. This one I wrote 2 years ago. Verse 44. The new clarity born in my soul wishes to try itself, and, looking out upon the world, sees apparent randomness that it would penetrate with the order and beauty of living thought. And this one I wrote last year for the same Rudolf Steiner verse. 44a. I wish to expand into the world's new sprouting life as only my thinking can do, spreading out across the acres, feeling the sun being newly born into grass and sweet flowers. Yeah, thank you, Kelly. I was tuning her piano, and then we had a conversation afterward. It was very pleasant. Enjoy. We try to raise it up, help each other come to something together. So it doesn't have to be anything in particular that we talk about. It could be anything. I've been talking recently about choice, the little voice in your head that says do this or don't do this. I was even postulating with my friend Kofi that people who hear the voice and ignore it have more choice than I do, because when I hear do this, I do it. And in a way, I have less choice. We were talking about choice, that he also, if he sees a child in trouble, he has to help the child. He has no choice. But in a way, it's a contradiction, because I believe he is elevated a bit and he has more freedom of thought than the person who actually can go against what's right and wrong. It's a weird thing that you think you have more choice if you can do wrong, but in a way, the feeling of freedom is stronger in someone who doesn't have that dilemma each time. But we were talking about that, we could talk about that, or this thesis idea that I gave you a while ago. Anything you like.
Yes. Well, what you just said, that little description of choice, it spurred for me the idea that somebody who's acting more in freedom has already made a whole lot of choices to lead them to that position, so that they have already chosen to help that child in need long before they were ever there.
Nice.
Just that they are even able to help that child in need has been created by all of these other choices that have led them to that moment. Yeah.
I feel that for myself, but I don't remember. I suppose every time, I should say, is it a common thing that everyone knows what I mean by that voice? Is it? Because it's not the English language. It's not some voice, which is what we hear from people who've committed crimes, that they heard this horrible voice.
Oh, yes.
And so it's not that. And so you and I are talking about something we both have in common, but we have to say, do you have a voice? Is it something you hear? And is it English? Or is it a feeling?
Ah, it's a feeling. I would say it sometimes feels like a voice. I can understand why that is how one describes it, because it almost does have words pushing you in one direction or another. And I guess I am not as elevated to always have the voice that tells me the right thing. I sometimes do still have that voice that I think, you know what, I don't need to listen to that voice. That isn't a kind voice. That isn't the voice that I want. I still have those guys.
I mean, in the cartoons, you see the two on the shoulders.
Right.
Do you think there are two?
No, I think there are multitudes. Okay.
And of course, it's not every decision. As we're driving, we're making decisions 5 a second even.
Right, right.
Anyway, my friend wrote this piece about how she was told by herself again and again that it was wrong.
Mm-hmm. And she kept going until finally this horrible thing. And when she finally told the man it was enough, you're obviously not for me, he blamed her for not being patient with him, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so she, even at the leaving moment, the parting moment, she had more evidence, this is wrong, I'm glad I'm leaving.
Yes.
So
yes.
Did she have more choice? She knew what to do. She didn't do it.
Right.
Which is different than me. When I hear the voice, I go, okay.
Right. You trust it.
And so I'm wondering if she has more choice than I do. Mm-hmm. She may feel that she doesn't. She sees the hole, like the addict. They're
right.
going down the street. They see the same hole, and they fall in it again.
Right.
So what is that? Is that more choice or less choice? I have no idea.
Yeah, it's interesting because I wonder if choice isn't the word at that point. It's more will. Nice. You're drawn towards the wrong thing, and you don't have the will to go towards the right thing.
Nice.
Or even perhaps hear the voice that might be saying the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, you hear it, but then there's this other thing. So whatever it was that made her go towards this person who was not good. You know, whatever in her felt good when he was too aggressive, or what, you know, whatever feels good with the addiction that someone is in, or whatever. So, I guess choice, if you feel like you have choice, that means you have the will to do the right thing.
That's right. And she apparently didn't, or I would think, or the addict, I won't talk about her then, but the addict, you think they know it's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They do it anyway. You know, even from the very beginning of our history, that Socrates was talking about these things. Would a person do wrong intentionally? He was saying that the only reason people do wrong is that they're misled somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went through this whole Socratic dialogue with people to make them agree that if it's wrong, it will hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
If it hurts them, they have pain. Will they intentionally have pain? And the people have to say, I don't think so. No, so it must be that they're misled somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But it's too simplistic for the modern person to say that. Why does the person do what they know is going to hurt them? Of course we see cutting mm-hmm. of the arms.
Mm-hmm.
It happens all the time.
Yeah.
So I like your idea that it's not a freedom. A question of the will, not to be able to choose, is more likely.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I wonder sometimes if people, after a series of making the wrong choices, don't hear as well the other choice. It's like a groove that that you're in. And it's harder and harder to hear anything else. Even if it is hurting you, you don't know what other choice you have besides continuing the same. In the same way as your other example of the person who will automatically help the person in need, that is, in a way, a groove, but it's, I would think of it more as a capacity that they have developed to see the need and fulfill it.
I brought up with him the idea of Steiner's water trial. I think it was the water trial where you see the problem and only you, and maybe it's the air trial. I can't remember which one it is, but no one else sees the problem. You see it and it's only now you have to do it. And
mm-hmm.
if you didn't do it, nobody would blame you because no one saw it.
Mm-hmm.
But you would blame yourself. And so when he thinks about saving the child, in the back of his mind, he knows the result of not saving the child, and he must save the child, or he'll be condemned forever for his own misaction. And so that's why he was bringing up the idea of, I don't have a choice.
Mm-hmm. Well, he does have a choice, but he knows very clearly the consequences of the other choice,
I said, why do you walk carefully in the dark at night when you're going to the restroom? Why do you walk carefully? Why don't you just zoom through the house? You're smart. You have wisdom, right? You know what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you have to be slow.
Yes. And in that same picture with the addict still choosing this wrong thing as though they don't really know the consequence. Or the other possibility that there might be.
I play chess with a friend online, and we'll get to the middle game again and again. He'll make a wrong move in the middle, where it's really the best part of the game. We're able to win or lose at any moment. And again and again, he makes the wrong move. And he actually wrote me that statement as he made the wrong move. He didn't realize he made the wrong move. He made the best move he could make. And so I showed him what he could have done or whatever. And he said, there's no points for not seeing the best path. There's no points for doing your best. Mm-hmm. You lose. Mm-hmm. You do your best and you lose. And I wonder if there isn't a choice then with the addict at all, that it's, they don't see, they actually don't see how they cannot. Do you know any, personally, do you know any addicts? I know a few. And it's really, you can't actually help them. It's so personal. They have mm-hmm. to figure it out. Mm-hmm. You can't give them any cheer up, you know, it'll be better. There's nothing you can do for them. I have no idea how to help, except to sit with them, to be with them. For that second, they won't be taking the drug. For that minute you're with them, maybe mm-hmm. they won't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a nice feeling to not feel like you can help somebody that you can see needs help. So that child, you see they need this help, you jump in. But if you see somebody and you know that nothing you can say or do, besides, you know, averting it for that one moment, can actually help, that's a... I almost don't even believe in that. That's hard for me to even go towards. I just think, oh, but we always can help. But I don't... also have come to situations where I realize that I actually can't. No amount of goodwill or love or anything. And I guess that is... there is goodwill. There is free will. So that is the consequence of free will, is that they have to choose it. They have to step towards their own best interest.
It may have been a while since you read The Philosophy of Freedom, Steiner's Philosophy of Freedom. I'm trying it again. I've always loved the idea of this moral imagination, that if you're skilled somehow, I don't know how you get it. Again, how do you get it? The ability to see what's needed is the first thing. How? First of all, you see what's needed, and then the strength to actually apply it in the right way. Mm-hmm. And somehow that's freedom. Mm-hmm. This philosophy of freedom is having the toolbox of all the possibilities that you could come up with that would fix. I've always loved this, fix it. Here I am fixing pianos. I love fixing things. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And when I think of people, that's a bigger toolbox. I do not have that toolbox.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, and there's where there's the gratitude for the other higher beings and karma and all of the other tools that I don't have, but that exist, so that there can be a little bit of peace knowing that help is available, even if I don't have to be the vehicle for it.
Do you have, of course, you just mentioned it, you have a feeling that there are spiritual beings. Is it a belief or is it a knowledge? For myself, I talk about it like a belief because that's polite. Mm-hmm. I don't want to talk about it like I know something, but actually I know something.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't prove it to anybody.
Right.
Right? So I'm politically correct and say I have a belief.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have that same kind of feeling that it's, you talk of spiritual beings, is it a knowledge or a belief? Is it a hope?
Yeah.
Maybe that's too personal, but...
No, I don't think that's... For me, it is a knowledge. And I agree with you that there is a politeness in treating it as a belief in mixed company, if you want to call it that. You know, if you don't know yet where another person stands, you don't want to presume that knowledge with people who don't share it. But yes, for me, it is absolutely an experience that I have of other beings.
Talking of freedom and talking of choice, it very much seems that these beings are not doing a lot for us, really. We are shown that we pray and ask for help, and then maybe we get the idea. There's this great joke of the guy falling down the roof, praying, "God, help me, I'm falling off the roof." And then he gets caught on a nail, and he says, "Never mind, God, I got caught on a nail." Right? But we ask, but then we don't really see that it works. The prayer doesn't actually work somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it always takes these unusual forms. You really have to be prepared for it to take whatever form it can take. But it's very clear to me, if I'm asking, if I'm connecting, then the help is available. And if I'm not connecting, I feel that help not being available. You know, I feel how, you know, on a day when I've forgotten to say my prayers in the morning, as I call it to my children,
yes,
then I go astray. Things do not go as well.
Yeah.
And I miss opportunities, and I wonder why, and then I remember.
I suppose it's a little easier to believe in your own higher self than it is to believe in this big bearded guy in the clouds. And so when I pray, so to speak, I'm probably in myself trying to reach out to myself in
mm-hmm.
a way.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, that does open the door to the higher imagination that can give you the tool to solve the problem that you couldn't solve. And so asking for help actually can work simply by opening your own self to the largest extent.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, that is still a belief in spiritual beings, because I'm believing in myself as bigger than I am.
Right. Yes, even that. And I think in that way, there are many, many people who really believe in higher beings. People can very easily have that experience of themselves or other people that they know and love as being so much more and larger than their physical here and now seeming self.
The atheists would say that we have less freedom, less choice, because of the burden of this bigger picture that we have of spiritual beings, because they obviously have intentions and they have forces and powers, and that atheists don't especially want to live in that kind of confining world.
Mm, mm-hmm.
Interesting paradox. You and I might say, no, there's so much more freedom
mm-hmm.
with a world that has spiritual beings.
Right, so much more freedom because of having so much more capacity, so much more strength at your disposal, so much more perspective available.
Nice.
But I, you know, having spoken with atheists, my heart goes out to them because I feel like they are trying to be courageous and independent, mm-hmm. and that they. There's this feeling that is the correct path, though harder.
Yep, the adult path.
The adult path, exactly.
Yeah, we're children.
Mm-hmm. To not be children of these other beings, but to be oneself only, disconnected, autonomous.
This love I've had of Steiner's ideas allows a spiritual world that is totally pulling away from us, letting us make our own decisions for our own good. We're the first beings to come along who actually are learning to make our own minds up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not the childish picture of the threatening, angry God who only likes one people on earth, everybody else going to hell. But that the spiritual world is there hoping we will figure it out for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy that he gave us these pictures,
mm-hmm.
which can allow freedom of movement, freedom of thought, even amongst the spiritual beings.
Mm-hmm. Yes, while you were speaking, the image came to mind of watching a child who is learning to walk. Just that feeling of you're not going to hold on to the child. Of course, you're going to just rejoice in their own efforts to find the uprightness. You're there around them being upright yourself and enjoying that beautiful movement that they do.
I so honor parents that their hope, their greatest wish is that the child will grow up and leave them. That's the epitome of their skill, is that they'll be so strong that they'll go on their own.
Mm-hmm.
My God.
Yeah.
That you love something so much that you're hoping they will leave you. In
yes.
a way. It's, again, this paradox.
Ah, yes, it is. It is
marvelous.
A beautiful paradox.
Marvelous.
Ah, yeah. Not without joyful pain at every step.
Of course.
You know?
Imagine. Thank you, Kelly. That was lovely. I think that's enough.
Oh, good.
Don't you think?
Yeah, thank you. That was very nice.
It's nice when something can come around and...
Yeah.
Anyway.
Good. Yeah, that
also,
was fun.
Also, podcasts, they say the average podcast in different parts of the country is 38 minutes is the average in the Northeast, but that's the longest. Most podcasts are 15, 20 minutes down here, so we have less time...
Less time to hold people.
Yeah.
To really focus on something. Well, good. I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you.
I think it's wonderful.
And it feels nice for people to have a reason to... I mean, how would we have ever talked about that today?
Yeah, we wouldn't have. And really, we don't have enough conversations in normal life.
Yeah.
It's all so... so much practical.
Yeah, practical. How was your day? What are you doing now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Barbara and I have been having a little study, 20 minutes a week, just reading some real arcane Steiner about after death or something. And I like it as a balance to the practical world. It'd be so cool if that was true, what he's saying. It would be so amazingly cool.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side is, why would he lie about it?
Right.
You know, why is he putting all this effort? Year after year, the same lie. He's really good at lying that he can remember everything he said before. It's really marvelous.
Yes. Yes, but it's good to keep it a little bit in that. Instead of just having this faith.
Yeah.
In every, you know, but holding it a little bit, this working hypothesis. All right, well, how would that really be?
As a scientist, my ability to believe in Steiner is the idea that space-time, which is apparently what we are living in, it's a single dimension called space-time. There's no such thing as a linear time from one point of view. It's all times from all point of views.
Mm.
And since we can't think that way, we can't perceive the reality of the world. That, for me, is why we don't remember past lives. If only I could have all times in all perspectives, I could certainly see my past life, and I could certainly see the spiritual being. And so that, for me, it's my own limitation.
Right.
It's not some secret. It's only my own limitation that I've learned this linear thinking.
Yes, and how to get beyond that so that you can think.
And so that, for me, is what meditation is trying to do, to break out of that one point of view, one moment after the next.
Yes. And it's almost by going through that way of thinking, you know, if you're, well, I guess you're doing the review and you're thinking backwards through time. It's really still starting in that linear, just taking it backwards. Yes, I feel like a very beginner.
Yeah, of course. You're never any more than a beginner.
Thank you again, Kelly. That was very sweet. And thank you for listening. If you have questions or comments, I would appreciate it. Go to my website, reasoningwithanoptimist.net, and drop me a line. This is Jack Bressett Mills. Bye-bye.